Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. It's a great Monday. Kent Summers will jump on board today. Paula is off. Kent Summers, AZ Central Cardinal Insider, good friend of the show. What can you say about last night? I mean, we could do hours, and there's so much other stuff going on. Todd Graham and Mike Leach after the game, the chicken bleep, bowl bleep comment from Todd Graham, and the Cubs are in the World Series against Cleveland tomorrow night. The Suns open their season on Wednesday. The Diamondbacks are searching for a manager. It's all over the place. It's awesome. There's so much happening. I love this time of year. But obviously, with what happened last night, that was a game. Eric, let's just get right into it. That was a game that I've seen lots and lots of sports, as have you. And we've seen games over and over and over. And there wasn't a point in time in last night's game where I felt like, boy, am I seeing some bad football. From the start of the game to the end of the game and overtime. And yeah, there were some bad plays, some weird plays, some strange plays. There were things happening that were odd, things that we just don't see. But if you look at it from top to bottom, a 6-6 tie, that will go down as one of the greatest games I've ever seen.
If you would have told me before the game started that the Seahawks and Cardinals would play to a tie where no touchdowns were scored, I probably would have said, it's probably your kind of game, but it's definitely not my kind of game. Yeah. But after watching it, it definitely was our kind of game. And you and I don't always see eye to eye on what aesthetically pleasing football looks The drama, the effort, there was the sense that this is a really big game. These are two, I don't want to say desperate teams, but two teams who really needed a win. For the Cardinals, it was to kind of stay alive, so to speak. For the
Do you think they're dead now?
No, but for Seattle, it was to really step on their throats and get some separation in the NFC West. And you just got the feeling, I put on Twitter last night, the NFL has lost so much sizzle this season.
Yes.
And last night there was so much intrigue, so much drama, I wish every game was like that. Of course it can't be, but I just love the way those two teams were just laying it all out there last night.
So there's a difference because we've been getting hammered, we being here in Arizona, and that's one of the few times that I will ever refer to we and us because I don't have any allegiance to teams and all that stuff, but I do live in Arizona. And so, you know, we get hammered here for the way that the football team played the game last night. And for those that are on the East Coast or wherever that don't have the appreciation for a game that you look at and say, wow, this was desperate times. This was a desperate time for the Cardinals last night. And nobody likes a tie. I'm of the opinion that there should be the rule put in place. Put the rule in place that you play the game until there is a winner. Okay, so let's just start with that concept on the game from last night. There should be a rule in place that is there in stone that says there will be a winner in this game. No ties. Nobody likes a tie. I don't see a tie in college football. I don't see a tie in high school football. I heard players after the game on Sunday night say, we wanted to have a winner. We don't quite understand this. What do you mean we finish in a tie? Nobody likes ties. Pete Carroll had said, I don't ever remember playing into a tie. Now, is there this public rancoring about let's have games finish? A tie is not a bad thing. Well, the players union would probably get involved in this if, in fact, there was a move afoot to say, let's not finish games in a tie. I mean, Eric, if I'm looking around at tie games from last night, I look at it and say, that's something that, yeah, it finished in a tie. I don't like the way it finished, but those are the rules that are in place. I don't know, though, why we have to have a separate set of rules for a game that finishes in the regular season versus a game that's in the postseason. If this were in the postseason, they would have just kept playing. So why in God's green earth don't we have that rule universally across the board that all games are going to be played with these same set of rules, regular season and postseason? I mean, there were fans last night that thought the game was over off the first field goal that was made by Catanzaro. So that's my first inkling on this whole deal is, because I could go down the list on how the special teams were dreadful. That was part of the game itself. The overriding story is the Cardinals are now in a much more difficult situation than Seattle is in having a tie. You hope, and Bruce Arians alluded to this, you hope that it doesn't come down to the end of the season and that you have this tie that's sitting there and it keeps you out, because guess what? This year's NFC is much better, in my humble opinion, and much deeper and much more wide open, I might add, than it is of any of the other teams, years, I should say, in terms of depth. And so when it comes to wild cards and all of that, because I don't see now the Cardinals catching Seattle. I just don't see it. You know, in terms of on-the-field play, and just one other thought on this, Seattle won the game last night. Even though they finished in a tie, that was a win for the Seahawks. Are you kidding me? They come down here on the road, and they're in first place already. So what did it really do to Seattle? It didn't hurt them as opposed to it hurting the Cardinals more. And if you want to sit here today and just scream and yell about officials and missed calls, I would present to you other cases on the field, like, I don't know, drop balls by Michael Floyd. Yeah, he tried to play through with a hamstring, but once again, Michael Floyd hurt this team. Yeah, John Brown didn't play and Jerron Brown got hurt. If David Johnson is able to lean out a little bit with the football or maybe dive into the end zone, we're talking about a win today. I'm not being critical of David Johnson, but that's how close this went. I didn't think Carson Palmer had a great game. I'm sorry. Everybody's saying Carson Palmer had a great game. You could even hear it in Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth last night. Not that they're the end-all of end-alls, but Carson Palmer last night was under pressure most of the evening. 38% of the snaps, according to Pro Football Focus, Carson Palmer was under pressure. 38%, almost half of the snaps. Okay? His average depth per target, meaning the average yards that he was throwing, was 11 yards. That is not down the field offense. Again, this is according to Pro Football Focus today. Carson, when he went downfield, was 6 of 16 for 39 yards. That's a passer rating of just 45%. So, you know, you add all this up on Carson, and yeah, Seattle deserves a ton of credit, and I'll get into Earl Watchford and DJ Humphreys in a second because the numbers for them were putrid, okay? We're not going to sit here and just sugarcoat this that it came down to a Catman hitting off the side of a goalpost, and that's why the Cardinals ended up in a tie. There were mitigating factors throughout this game. The Cardinals dominated the statistics sheet. They should have won this game. Instead, they finish in a tie. Here is Bruce Arians after last night's tie.
It's good, two good defenses and two good football teams, you know. Hopefully this one doesn't come back to haunt us down the road. Hopefully sometimes a tie can help you. But I'd sure rather have the win. Coming to work tomorrow, you didn't lose. You played one hell of a football game. And our kicking game let us down a little bit today. They've been carrying us for a couple weeks. And, we left three field goals out there.
Okay. So we could go beyond this and say the head coach, and this is just how it is this day and age. You don't hear coaches step to the podium and say, our special teams were awful. We have to make some change in personnel. Like, if the Cardinals don't at least go out and look at other kickers. Catanzaro's done a nice job since he's come here, but come on. You've got to go out and explore other options. This is a team that gave us the all or nothing mantra at the start of the year. And so far, it's been a lot of nothing. Yeah, we could have been this close. That's easy to spin it that way. But let's dive a little deeper into this. They couldn't block. Earl Watford and DJ Humphreys couldn't block Cliff Avril, Michael Bennett last night. They could not do it. And that's why Carson was under siege most of the night. Carson is lucky his health insurance was paid up before the game because they kept pounding on him. I can find positives out of this. I'm actually a pretty positive guy. I'm one of those that it's not always about who gets the W and who gets the L. Sometimes during the course of an NFL season, because the season is so long. And it's just like in any professional sports. You know, I'll watch the Cleveland Cavaliers lose one or two games in December, and it'll be big blaring headlines. The same with Golden State. What's wrong with this team? In the NFL, you see teams all the time that are late into the season and they suddenly figure it out. They're 7-5 or they're 8-5. That means they lost five times. They end up playing late into the postseason, even to the Super Bowl. Yeah, there's the teams that run the table. Not all the way through. They'll have a loss here or a loss there. But by and large, they just blow right through teams. Is Pittsburgh a bad team because what happened yesterday to New England? No, they didn't have Ben Roethlisberger. You know, the Cardinals are not a bad team. You may say they're a bad team, but I think it's pretty naive just to go right down the easy path of, well, it's the officials and that's why we lost. Should there be some blame directed towards the coaching staff? Absolutely there should be. Bruce Arians didn't stop the clock at the end of regulation. He had three timeouts. Those are three timeouts he'll never get back. It's very fair to question what was going on there. Arians took the kickoff to start the overtime period. Very fair to question that move. I just don't find it to be so cut and dry. I think they've made a lot of progress. Myself, personally. Like, Eric, as you watch the Cardinals this season, and they've had their ups and downs, I'm sitting here saying I'm seeing a lot of progress on the defensive side of the football. They're one of the better defenses now. Chandler Jones had 8 pressures on 37 pass attempts on Sunday night. That is getting after it. Marcus Golden is getting after it. We're seeing a push up the field. I don't care how bad Seattle's offensive line is. That's the team you're chasing. So I can sit here and look at a tie and say, yeah, it's like kissing your sister. Nobody wants that. They're not that far away.
And as maddening as this season has been at times,
yeah,
the Cardinals roster is loaded with talent. And the reality of the situation is the Cardinals are 2 kicks away from being, what, 6-2?
Right about.
5-2, whatever. Yeah. They're that close. That's the fine line in the NFL. And the cream will rise to the top because, like you said, the pass rush with Golden and Jones, and things are going to start to come together. And I'll be curious to see how Sunday plays out against Carolina. Who knows? I mean, Carolina's way down, but still it's a game on the other side of the country coming off a really hard-fought
gut-wrencher. It was a gut-wrencher.
Tie? Yeah. I mean, who knows what's going to happen next weekend. But if they can win in Carolina, they get to the bye, they get healthy, they're in a position to at least make a run at a wild card.
No, I mean, look, this will be one of the more remarkable comebacks by an Arizona Cardinal team since they've been here. If, in fact, they're able to get back into this race.
And if Carson Palmer can stay healthy, because you're hearing the whispers of he may be more hurt than they're leading on, and he's not practicing in the middle of the week, and is that because...
There's some balls that he missed the other night.
Yeah, you know, no doubt.
When everybody wants to just say it comes down on the kicker, and that the quarterback never makes a mistake, or that wide receivers don't drop footballs, it's a team sport. I thought it was pretty cool to see Carson Palmer run out after Chandler to console him, okay? Most players would say, you know, we're doing our job. It's got to be on this guy, and it's got to be on that guy. That's the easy way to go. And usually, I've found through the years, those teams don't go far. Because when you start saying, I don't got a problem, it's that guy over there. He's the problem. Usually, those teams splinter and don't make big results and make big things happen. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. On the other side, Kent Summers, AZ Central Sports, Cardinal Insider. That's next. And now Kent Summers joins us, AZ Cardinals, AZ Central Cardinals Insider. Good friend of the show, a late night, and I appreciate him coming on this morning because I'm sure you're a little bleary-eyed, though not as much as the Cardinals probably after last night. So let's just start with the basics. You're walking into the stadium last night or yesterday afternoon at about what time to start your job? About what time?
I usually get to the stadium three and a half hours before the game. So I was there probably 2:15.
Okay, as you're driving to the stadium, you're probably thinking about what kind of game it is that you're going to cover, right?
Right.
And so what kind of game were you thinking going into the stadium you were going to cover?
I really didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't have a good read. I still didn't have a good read on the Cardinals, much less Seattle. I judging from the tone and what the Cardinals said all week, I expected them to be very physical. I expected them to, you know, especially defensively, to really be concentrating on hitting the Seahawks and making sure they sent a message that, hey, we're as good as you are, we're as tough as you are, because they really felt like in those three losses to Seattle, they weren't nearly as physical as the Seahawks were. So I knew that was going to be a theme. I just didn't know, obviously, what kind of game it would shape up to be. I thought it would be low scoring, but, you know, I've thought that before about games and been drastically wrong.
Okay, as the game is unfolding, let's pick it up at about the start of the second quarter. Are you of the mindset, wow, there's not a whole lot here for me to work with, or, wow, these are two really good teams that are really hitting the hell out of each other, this is a tough game?
The latter. I thought this is a fun football game, and I put it in the context, I followed Oklahoma, University of Oklahoma, my whole life, so I watched them play Texas Tech the night before in a game where it was Arena League without a roof.
Hmm.
And so to come out the next day and just see a defensive battle and the hitting, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm thinking as the game progresses, this might be as good a game as I see all year long.
Okay, you get to halftime, you're starting to formulate some ideas. What is the overriding idea that is in your head at halftime about the game?
I think, first the blocked field goal, is that going to loom large? Because obviously points are going to be at a premium in this game, and that can the Cardinals ever put the ball in the end zone? Because if they do, this game likely is over, because Seattle's offense is not what it was, not without – you know, Marshawn Lynch since his retirement, Thomas Rawls with a broken leg. Russell Wilson is obviously not himself as a runner. I really didn't think Seattle was ever going to move the ball against the Cardinals. And I thought, you know, the Cardinals have enough playmakers. Somebody should be able to score one touchdown at least.
Okay, we're talking with Kent Summers, AZ Central Cardinals insider. Let's go down to the field then. You're allowed down on the field, for fans that don't know, you're in the press box until about the five-minute mark in the fourth quarter. So you head down to the field at the five-minute mark, and as you're going down there, Kent, what's going through your mind as you're going through the bowels of the stadium before getting on the field?
Well, I never got down there. In such a close game, I file a story at any game at the buzzer, just so we have something up online with our byline on it. So I'm thinking that what I've written here is a confused mess, because I've got the Cardinals winning, I've got the Seahawks winning. I didn't have a tie written yet, and I'm sitting next to our columnist Dan Bickley, who has two columns going side by side. So everybody's a little frazzled. But even at that point, I think the Cardinals are going to hold on to win this, you know, even with 5-6 minutes left in regulation.
Okay, so the game gets tied, and you're sitting there at that point thinking what exactly?
Just I'm looking at the clock and what time I have I have to file, and is this thing going to be over by 9:15, our first deadline? And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, the Cardinals get the ball first. Can they score a touchdown, obviously, and end this thing? And then, or if they do get close enough for Chandler Cannizzaro, will, you know, what will it look like? Because it's been such a problem, you know, early in the season, the first three games, and then, you know, they kind of straightened it out, but then it obviously had been a problem all night on Sunday night.
So some context, if you could. The game is winding down in regulation, and I put in my notes, why didn't Arians stop the clock at the end of regulation when he had three timeouts? Why did Arians take the kickoff to start overtime? I think those are just basic questions. Are you thinking some of the same things or some different things about the game itself? Or, again, you're just focused on deadline and trying to get something out there?
No, I'm thinking back a little bit to the first half and that critical play on the blocked field goal, the way the Cardinals managed the clock at the end of the half, you know, how Arians blew a timeout and challenging a play that wasn't challenged. Should they have called the pass play with no timeouts where Palmer was sacked and stripped of the ball but recovered? I think Carson made a mistake there. I think at the first sign of pressure, he should have thrown it away, and they should have tried another field goal, although that was a risky proposition all night. I'm just thinking back to the plays in the first half or the third quarter where they could have put it away. And even the strip sack by Chandler Jones, Wilson where the ball went nearly back to the end zone, but there were, you know, the Cardinals weren't aware of it. There was nobody there to pick it up. And, you know, there's so many plays in that game that I thought this thing could have flipped easily.
And I'm sure that when you got home, just to advance ahead a little bit further, you probably, or even today, are going through some of the things you couldn't get written in there. And then, because the easy ones at this point are, you have the missed field goals on both sides, you have a drop ball by Floyd, you have David Johnson hitting the pylon, not hitting the pylon. How do you process and put all of those together to give it context to what happened last night? Because there's so many plays, boom, 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 boom.
It's hard. I thought Pete Carroll said it probably best right after the game. It's like, I don't know that I've ever been involved in a tie-in. Right now, I can't really wrap my brain around this, about what happened, what it means, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's a hard thing. You know, how do you – there were people on the sideline, and I think a lot of fans in the stands who really didn't know the game was over when overtime ended. You know, I think everybody was kind of left with a feeling, wait, there's not more of this. This is it. We just – everybody goes home, and it's a tie. Just very bizarre. You know, I've been covering the team off and on since the early 90s, and obviously this is the first one I've ever covered. So from that standpoint, it was sort of fun as a journalist. It's a memorable moment in both teams' history.
Talking with Ken Summers. Before I let you go then, so they end up finishing in a tie, and you've got to put a bow on this so that fans can understand it. You want to hear from Arians. You want to hear from the players. And I guess if you could just take the fans behind the scenes as to how you were able to formulate that. It's been just over 13 hours ago that you put all this together, and what your big takeaway was from last night.
Well, I think the big takeaway, as I look forward, is, you know, does this help them eventually? You know, tying the Seahawks certainly helps you rather than losing, or, you know, does it haunt them forever? Do they end up at the end of the season, you know, half a game away from a wild card berth or something like that? You know, it's impossible to know. And it also, you know, the thing it emphasizes is just, and it's a cliche, but it's true, is just how thin the margin is in the NFL between winning and losing and having a successful season and a mediocre one. Is. I mean, without a high snap in the first game against the Patriots, maybe Chandler Cannonzaro makes that field goal. And certainly he should have made the one last night. So you put those two games together and the Cardinals are 5-2 and they're on top of the division and everybody, you know, everybody has them in the top five and they're powerful. So they blow a couple of special teams plays and they're 3-3-1 and now, you know, and now going to Carolina, which is struggling. And almost facing a must-win situation. I mean, at some point, they've got to put a significant winning streak together.
Is Chandler going to be kicking next Sunday, or is he going to be a former member of the Arizona Cardinals, in your opinion?
No, I think he'll be kicking. I really do. I mean, a lot of people are angry, and justifiably so, and think they should get another kicker. And you know, my response to all those questions is that's fine, but are you sure you can get somebody better? And there aren't a lot of unemployed good kickers right now. You know, maybe the Giants picked up the last one in Robbie Gould. But I think he'll get more time on the job. I really do. But they're unhappy with their special teams. In the big picture, you have to wonder if special teams coach James Jones is back next year. I don't think they'll make a move during this season, but certainly all the problems over so far this season don't you know, portend well for his future in Arizona.
Well, and it's top to bottom, too. The special teams have not been special. There's no other way to put it. Every facet has had a disastrous result so far.
Yeah, and it sort of looked like they were fixing it for a while against the 49ers and the Jets. And, you know, punter Ryan Quigley had been an upgrade, and Justin Bethel got healthy and was starting to make plays again. You know, on coverage teams, it looked like John Brown was getting close to breaking a punt or two, and they were at least downing kickoffs in the end zone instead of trying to return them from 8 yards deep. But, you know, so yesterday just blew apart a lot of improvement or some improvement that had been made in the last couple of weeks. I really thought they got out-coached on special teams. I mean, when Seattle can match up a 6'6" receiver on 5'8" Kerryn Williams, who's blocking a wing, that's a real, you know, I mean, that's a coaching win for the Seahawks, I think, that ended up in that blocked punt.
A last question I'll let you go, and that is, can this team physically, mentally pull it together for Sunday? It's a morning game. I'm not one of those that gets into the 10 a.m. starts, but a lot of people do. It's cross country. What happened in January against Carolina doesn't mean jack, in my opinion. This is about staying alive for both teams. Do you think they could go cross country, pull together and put together a complete effort, or could we completely expect them to be flat, Kent?
I think they can. I think it's going to be a tremendous challenge. I think Bruce Arians tried as soon as after the game to sort of set the agenda for the week to say, look, you didn't lose to the Seahawks. That was a good game. You played really well the whole time. We had some breakdowns on special teams that cost us this game. But overall, we're fine. We're trending in the right way. We've played better over the last month. We're starting to click. You know, believe it, put yourself behind it, yada, yada, yada. And I agree with all that. I mean, I think it's a really good course to take. But how much did this game take out of them? Not only emotionally, but physically. How banged up are they? I mean, there are reports out there now that receiver Jerron Brown tore his ACL in that game. So if they're without the two Browns and with Michael Floyd struggling, you know, how potent is this offense anymore?
Stay well. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
It's Kent Summers with us on the run. That guy saw it all last night. It's good stuff there with Kent. Todd Graham and Mike Leach. We actually have the video of what happened from the Pac-12 Network. And because we do this show, we can play it and we can dissect it. And we can let chicken bleep and bull bleep run. We can. And we're going to do that on the other side. It's a busy sports weekend. Of course, the Cubs are in play tomorrow night against the Indians in the World Series. The Suns start their season on Wednesday. The Coyotes have just been dreadful on the road. All this going on in our little slice of heaven here in Arizona. Thanks for being with us. What's interesting is I've gotten some notes this morning about the reaction that Arians had versus the reaction that Pete Carroll had about their kickers. So, and we'll get over to ASU in a second. Bruce Arians was asked if he had any words for his kicker, Chandler Catanzaro, after the game. Bruce Arians said, quote, make it. This is professional. This ain't high school, baby. You get paid to make it. Very straightforward. Ouch. Hammer him. Pete Carroll was asked the same question about his kicker, Stephen Hauschka, and his blunder. Pete Carroll said, Hauschka made his kicks to give us a chance, and unfortunately, he didn't make the last one. He's been making kicks for years around here, but he's going to hit a lot of winners as we go down the road here. I love him, and he's our guy. Now, that may not sound like much on either side, and the facts are, if I'm Bruce Arians, I'm pretty well ticked as well because of the way it's gone with a kicker, but kickers are just funny in that way. Kickers have to be built up and have to, they can't just not run into people in the grocery store or run into people out in public or see teammates in the locker room and not feel something towards them. It's kind of like relief pitchers, closers. I've seen closers come in and blow games and ball players freeze them out and don't like them at all. And it becomes nasty and toxic and they just melt down. Kickers, it's the same way. If they're not tough enough to handle it, they're going to melt down. We have not seen this type of meltdown out of the Cardinals, out of this specific kicker. I mean, Jay Feely at the end, he had some tough days too. And so as I'm watching Chandler Catanzaro and hearing Bruce's reproach, because Chandler's going to get asked about it, and if they bring some people in, I would imagine that they would, how's he going to handle that? How's he going to handle that? Let's talk about ASU for a couple of minutes. The game on Saturday night, we're about to show you the ending of the game. So here is the post-game handshake. Remember, we went through this whole build-up to the game where Mike Leach had accused ASU of stealing signs, and they do that. They've got a bunker. They go about it. Everybody's making a big deal. So the game ends. ASU loses. They get whipped. And here is Mike Leach and Todd Graham at the center of the field.
Okay, Mike. Hey, man, what you did in the newspaper's chicken shit. I've always respected you. You do that bullshit chicken.
Mike. So it's pretty straightforward what he said there. So I saw this late, actually early Sunday morning, and figured that this would cause a rapid fire reaction from fans who were out there. And it was already on social. It was like 2 a.m. when I saw it. It still hasn't gone away. And while most ASU fans respect what Todd Graham said to Mike Leach after the game, and they want their coach to have their back. I was at a luncheon with, they were honoring the 87 Rose Bowl team on Friday. Michael Crow, Dr. Crow, got up to speak, and he said, all I can say about Washington State, there's not much I can say. I'm paraphrasing here. But we just need to go beat them. We just need to go beat them. So I don't know if that flies with how Crow and Ray Anderson are wired. The overriding story here is ASU suffers another very disappointing loss, and it's very easy to explain away what's going on with the Sun Devils. Like most teams in college football, they're going to have their fair share of adversity. Unlike most teams in college football, ASU is down to their fourth or even fifth quarterback that's taken snaps this season. No team is going to have success when that happens. But even if they had their quarterback in place, I would find it hard to believe that they would be having a successful season when their defense is as bad as it has been playing this year. You know, we kind of just want to turn off when I sit here and point out they're 120th in total defense, and I'll get the, well, yeah, but, you know, we played Texas Tech early in the year, and, oh, you know, we had Cal, and they put up a lot of points, and, you know, Washington State's known for doing that. That doesn't matter to me. Understand, that doesn't matter to me. What matters is good, sound tackling. What matters is good, sound scheme. What matters is that you were able to solve the issues that we saw last year in the bowl game, which were a disaster. And I think in some ways, Todd has been correct. Coach Graham has been correct. And when he said, after all the staff departures, that our staff is going to be better. I think he's been correct in that. Mike Norvell's doing a nice job in Memphis, but the offense really, in my opinion, hasn't missed a beat, especially when you look at all the stuff that's gone on with that team this year. Nobody's going to come in here and win. When you have to go all the way down your quarterback depth chart and unredshirt guys and all that, I mean, you got to walk on tight end at one point or backup tight end that's taking a snap. You're just not going to win. But that doesn't prevent you from being able to tackle. And it's kind of like what's going on in Tucson. When you miss on recruiting on the defensive side of the ball, and you miss and you miss and you miss, their defense in the secondary is not much better than it was. And I don't care who goes on and plays in the NFL. Doesn't matter. Every week, they've got to score 30 to 40 points to even have a shot at winning a game. That's not the good sign. That's not a good sign for any team. When you've got to expect your offense and your defense has very little margin for error. That's why I was so complimentary after the UCLA game. Because I thought the defense made some plays, was able to make some stops. Well, UCLA is just not that good. You know, you should be supporting the Sun Devils more. No, I'm not, I shouldn't. I don't get a check from them. No, their defense is a long, long ways away. Eric, you're at the game on Saturday night. If we were to talk about ASU's defense being much better, marketably better, none better, or worse from the teams from last year, where would you come down on that one?
Ooh, they're better, but they're not any more consistent than last year's defense. I do think, not making excuses, but ASU has played a bunch of teams that throw the ball all over the field.
That's the Pac-12, though.
Yes, but they're not playing the Oregon States. They're not playing Stanford. They're not playing some of these other schools that are struggling on offense. They're playing Cal and Wazoo, and they're going to go to Washington in a couple weeks and give up a ton of points and a ton of yards. I think that there is progress, but I don't think there's marketable progress. I don't think they're that much better.
Okay, so if you're Ray Anderson, do you think Ray Anderson was happy after that game the other night?
No, I saw him on the field. He was giving the north end zone the death stare from the south end zone, if that makes sense. Mm. He had a glare. He was not blinking. He was standing there in the end zone after the game with his arms folded right next to Dr. Crow. They weren't really talking much. Clearly, the wheels were spinning on something. I'd love to crawl inside his brain and figure out what exactly was going on. But he can't be happy. I mean, Ray Anderson not only holds the football program in high standards, he holds all of ASU athletics programs in high standards. Like, look at what he's done with the swim program. I mean, they're bringing in all, they bring in Bob Bauman, Michael Phelps. I mean, that
right.
He is all about success across the board. A lot of these ADs, if we're good in basketball and we're good in football and we're good in baseball, we're not going to worry about those other sports because those pay the bills. But Anderson doesn't think like that.
Well, what's interesting is that luncheon I was at on Friday, is Dr. Crow got up to speak, and he just had kind of a throwaway 30 to 45 seconds about how there's been a bit of a change in the Sun Devil Stadium project, and we're going to look at some things, and we'll get back to you on it. We're going to go raise some more money, which is another way of saying we didn't get enough through. And then I'm hearing that the seats that were put in place, a guy like myself wouldn't even fit in, that there's been some issues, and that maybe it makes sense just to tear the whole thing down over on the east side. So Ray's got to go out, and he's got to knock on doors, and he's got to sit at luncheons and breakfasts, and he's got to go back to the big cigars and try and tap in on that. And Todd's done a terrific job in his early years, but I think in the last year and a half, there's been a little bit of support that has not been there. And I'm just hearing this from people that are around the Valley that do have some influence, that they're not happy. You know, they're not happy when you give up 400 and 500 and 600 yards. And you can't just say, press the reset button. We have another game next week. You cannot do that. It's fine that people have passion, that people care. But gosh almighty, every game it's, you know, Luke Falk. By the way, is Luke Falk an NFL guy?
Boy, he sure looked like it.
But is that because of the competition?
A little bit. But you know how hard it is, Brad, to throw 53 passes and complete 42 of them? I mean, that's a really, really good completion. No,
I was thinking of you. I was thinking of you as I was watching the end of Texas Tech, Oklahoma.
Like, well, my thought
took forever.
And my thoughts on Patrick Mahomes will never change. I think he's the best quarterback in the country, just playing in Lubbock.
He there was some football, okay, and this is a little rant. I know we're late, but we'll get the last one in. I'm watching the game Saturday night. I'm watching Ohio State and Penn State, and Ohio State losing doesn't mean anything, really. They can still come back. If they beat Michigan, they're going to be fine. They're going to be in the postseason, and that's that. They'll be in the playoff. But I'm watching Oklahoma, and it's like, man, this is Bob Stoops just getting shredded, giving up not just chunks of yards, like acreage they're giving up. And then yesterday morning, yesterday afternoon, I'm watching the Raiders-Jaguars just at the end, and I'm hearing Greg Gumbel try to get through the broadcast. You can just tell he's agitated with all the penalties. There were over 20 penalties in that game. The quality of football overall is not as crisp as it once was. There's no other way to put it. Get some other thoughts on the other side. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Before we get out of here, a couple other things. Seahawks, Cardinals. Now, for those of you that think ties don't do anything, in terms of interest, it scored an 11.6 overnight. It's a big number for Sunday Night Football. Last week's Colts versus Texans. Colts-Texans last week pulled just a 9.0. So there were more people that were into this game. Seahawks-Cardinals have finished in a tie. Seattle market had 47.9 rating. That means 47% of all TV, almost 48% of the TVs in Seattle were on. And Phoenix, 31.7. So that's some pretty good numbers. What was the other markets? Portland was 3, Albuquerque 4, Vegas 5, New Orleans 6, Denver 7, Sacramento 8, Norfolk 9. So the LA and New York, no. So this week it is it's about trying to get it figured out with Carolina. And it's also this week. We have game one of the World Series tomorrow night. We'll get into that tomorrow. Peter King will be with us tomorrow, our usual chat with Peter. Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network, all the fantasy football. Pedro Gomez will be joining us from the World Series. We have plenty there. There's plenty of content up on our website right now at sports360az.com. We're Arizona, Arizona, Arizona-centric. High school, college, pro college, high school. You can check out our content on all platforms. Thanks for being with us.